The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today my guests are from Booz Allen Hamilton, and we're going to be talking about unmanned systems, the government's use of it, trends in it, where the technology is going. My guests are Brian Abbey. He is Booz Allen Hamilton's Senior Vice President, focusing on the Navy Marine Corps area in terms of C4ISR. Is that correct,
That's
Brian?
Correct. That's correct.
Okay, great.
Roger.
I'll get this down. There's a little mouthful here. Also, Troy Abbott. Troy is a principal managing the engineering solutions delivery and implementation for the U.S. Navy. And Eric Billies, he is the principal leading the firm's Pacific Northwest operations. Guys, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Roger.
Thank you very much.
Well, I'm looking forward to this conversation. This is something that you see every day in the paper, on TV, unmanned systems. Everybody thinks of drones, but it's much more than just drones. And we're going to talk a lot about that today. But I'm just going to open up, you guys, and you can start talking about the trends in use of unmanned systems, whether it's government, commercial, where things are going, where things have been. So, Brian, or who wants to start?
Thank you, Roger. So, the U.S. military has actually been using unmanned systems probably the longest. You can go back to the early days of Iraq, or even as far back as some of our actions that we took in Kosovo. And it's really for a couple reasons. I think they had the most to gain from using drones. If you don't have to put a soldier into harm's way, it's worth it. They also have the money to develop the technology a little quicker back then in the 90s, early 2000s. But in recent times, I think you'll see that the commercial world is actually catching up. And the way I look at the unmanned systems problem, if I look at it for aerial vehicles versus ground vehicles, I think commercial companies are actually ahead on the ground vehicle side. You have companies like Amazon,
Google, right?
And Google, right, who are, you know, developing the automated cars and some shipping capabilities. And then on the aerial side, there's dozens of different military vehicles that are in use really every day across the world. I think it's also a little easier for the U.S. military because a lot of the barriers that exist commercially don't fully exist for the military. We usually gain access to the airspace we want to use a little easier in the military than what you can possibly get as a commercial company. You have better use of the communication links to control those vehicles, and things like operator training is not a trivial thing to consider when you're doing all that.
Sure. So that's interesting. And that's like one of the things you think about it, when you think UAVs, you think the DOD, you think military. You don't, even though there are, I guess, drones, or Amazon talks about using drones. I don't know if they even, I mean, I.
So,
you know,
so. Amazon actually, ideally, they want to use the drones to make deliveries here quicker and more efficient and cheaper, but they haven't even been approved in this country to do that. They're testing the technology right now, but they've actually been doing it in the countryside of England where they've been given permission. They can't even find an area in this country where they can get permission to do those tests.
Really?
Yeah.
That's fascinating. Now, one of the things that really struck me, and I have a procurement background, guys. Forgive me for that, okay? So I'm a procurement lawyer by training. But it's interesting, something you said just resonated with me with regard to where we are in terms of technology and innovation. You said DOD drove the technological innovation to come up with UAVs, you know, back in the 90s into the 2000s, right, essentially. So DOD at that time was driving, the government was driving the change. And then you followed up that today, commercial sector is primarily driving the capability and innovation. Does that create challenges for the government, and what you hear all the time is the ability to access commercial technologies, the innovation, to go take it to the next level.
What's very interesting is, and you, Roger and Brian kind of mentioned this too, just a couple years ago at the premier affiliation, AUVSI, that actually does, you know, and gathers together both government and commercial in terms of unmanned systems. About 3 to 4 years ago, it was probably dominated by mostly government and military. So three quarters of the participants were government. Now, when you go to an AUVSI event, it's completely the opposite. It's all commercial. And so that's when you start to think about how the government can really leverage that commercial technology. So another data point, when I was just kind of looking and doing a little research, for the oil and gas industry, which is kind of amazing, is that there's over 500 different aviation platforms that the oil and gas industry uses, and over 200 maritime platforms. So just think about all the different varieties of platform, sensor, power systems. There's so much to be adapted, I think, from the commercial industry now. And that trend just is continuing to go, and they're pushing the boundaries in terms of what's out there.
Right. And every day is something new, right? I mean,
absolutely.
Right. So when you're looking at the government's use of unmanned systems, what's the next step? I know there's things out there. I know we're going to talk about unmanned aerial vehicles going off aircraft carriers. Mm-hmm. But, you know, other than the, you know, that drone capability, where are things developing?
Well,
Troy.
The missions, the technology certainly bridges a gap, but the missions are still pretty substantially different, at least right now. And maybe we're going to see some overlap through that as it develops. But, you know, the government for a long time has been interested in the ISR piece, as you said. It's surveillance and reconnaissance. We're going to see more focus on logistics and resupply. You know, can we get a robotic delivery of equipment out to those guys in the field as opposed to having to send a convoy of Humvees, for example? We're going to see more persistent autonomy, unmanned, not necessarily in the sense of a vehicle that's buzzing around, but a robotic network of sensors that's still able to connect to one another, share information, and feed that back to home base, right? I think we're going to see a shift from, there was a, I don't want to call it a fallacy, but when UAVs first started to be deployed, it was assumed that, well, we can take the pilot out. The vehicle is going to be a whole lot more capable, a whole lot easier, cheaper to operate.
Sure, yeah.
They're going to be disposable, right? And it turns out that the systems themselves are just as expensive and costly to develop and maintain as some of the manned systems. And there's a huge personnel trail in the background, two or three operators now, as opposed to one pilot in some cases. So we haven't necessarily seen a manpower reduction, and a lot of that is because we still have to have people in the loop making decisions on what that vehicle is doing. So I think we're also going to see a trend towards, instead of humans directing the systems, we're going to see the systems coming up with their own ideas and suggestions and the humans simply approving that.
Humans launch it and it goes out and does its thing?
Well, I think we're that's maybe another step. I think there will come a day when the systems are operating completely autonomously, but there's an intermediate step there of basically the vehicle transmitting back and saying, here's what I think you ought to do, how about it? And it's either a yes, I agree,
or no,
don't do that. Yeah. I think the human's going to be in the loop for a while, but more and more distanced.
Okay, well,
but, yeah, the autonomy and adding the artificial intelligence piece is sort of the holy grail now for these systems, but it's still a number of years off. So right now, as Troy said, a lot of the technologies around unmanned systems began with the hope that it would be cheaper.
Yeah.
It's proven not to be. And the reason why the military is still mostly interested in it is because of the safety issue. And when you get to the point where you get that artificial intelligence component in there, I think there'll be another drop in the cost because you will take a lot of the people out of the loop at that point.
Right. Well, you know what, guys? We're already up on the first break.
Oh, wow.
My guests today are Brian Abbey, Troy Abbott, and Eric Billies. They're from Booz Allen Hamilton. We're talking about unmanned systems, the trends, the future, how the government's taking is or is not taking advantage of commercial technology, and what the next steps are. When we come back, I'm actually going to ask that question: what areas of commercial, development we touched on a little bit, are there that the government can take advantage of or hasn't yet taken advantage of? Opportunities for continued technological innovation, which is what everybody's talking about in government these days. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guests today are from Booz Allen Hamilton. Brian Abbey is a senior vice president focusing on Navy, Marine Corps, business in intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance. Did I get that right, Brian?
That's correct,
okay,
Roger.
Okay, thank you. And Troy Abbott. Troy is a principal managing the engineering solutions delivery for the U.S. Navy. And Eric Billies, he's a principal leading the firm's Pacific Northwest operations.
Correct. Right?
Is that fair to say?
That's fair to say.
Okay,
Roger.
Okay. So when we took the break, I teed up the question about commercial technologies, where they are, without the government could take advantage of as the market is changing. I'm just going to open it up, Eric.
Sure. And just to kind of take a step back, and you talked, Roger, about, you know, adapting commercial technologies. So when you're talking about unmanned and autonomous platforms, you know, the air, the maritime, and the ground robotics all present different challenges. And so they have different requirements in terms of sensors, payloads, power, and they have different challenges. But essentially, for the government and the military, a lot of it really comes down to, you know, what are the sensors that you're actually putting onto these platforms? You know, how do you make unmanned systems more capable with a longer duration using less power? There's a number of different, you know, technology areas which I think the military and the government can adapt. I would say three are really predominant right now: autonomous technologies, which is a very, very hot topic right now. How can they be effectively secured, and how can we reduce the risk by using those? Data fusion technologies. So it's all about the data. It's all about the trust in the data and the speed by which we use that data to make decisions. And I would say a third area would be sense and avoid systems, particularly for low altitude and in dense environments. One of the things that I think the trends that are also happening, I would say, in the military, and DOD in particular has been pushing this for a couple of years now in terms of innovation and getting capability out quickly, is the trend towards experimentation and prototyping. And I think that the Navy R&D community has a number of different opportunities by which we can do that and bring, you know, commercial technology to the fore. They're also using things like DIUX, Defense Innovation University. So putting DOD into major technology hubs like the Silicon Valley or Boston and getting those technologies out quicker. And this is where, you know, and I'd like to ask Brian kind of jump in a little bit, where I think Booz Allen
really—
Are you
taking my job there?
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. It's fine. That was good.
Where I think Booz Allen becomes really an essential partner for DOD in terms of how we bring unmanned systems to the government.
Yeah, and in the maritime domain, we've actually invested Booz Allen's money in developing a system that we call Mantis. It's an unmanned boat. It's about 8 feet long, Eric.
It is 8 feet long, yeah. That's right.
And we've integrated a number of different payload packages to do a couple different demonstration and experiments for the Navy, just depending on which mission. We've been in Honolulu for one exercise where we were helping with force protection, if I recall correctly.
Force protection inside harbor areas, yes.
Right, and we have another exercise coming up at Camp Pendleton with the Marine Corps in April. And
we're essentially using that in terms of working with the Marine Corps in terms of their amphibious missions. So all the intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance-type missions, you know, the beach reconnaissance initially, the communications back to amphibious platforms that are actually making landings. So using those kinds of prototyping experiments and helping the government actually kind of to see different use cases,
sure,
for how they're doing it.
Yeah, and Troy, this strikes me as, because when I think of Booz Allen, you know, I think of the consulting piece where Booz Allen helps organizations, you know, figure out how to run more efficiently and effectively. This is great information because I don't think of Booz Allen, or historically, I don't think people do, I'll put it that way. Not necessarily me.
We're changing about, that.
Right. About, you know, developing prototypes and direct capability that could be delivered to the Navy. Is that, I mean, that's
amazing. May surprise you a bit, but, you know, we're a company of 24,000 people, and we have about 3,300 engineers in the firm, and three of them are sitting with you today.
Well, can you talk a little about the engineering solutions beyond what Brian and Eric have talked about, Troy?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, Booz Allen has a legacy of being a management consulting company, but we've invested heavily to evolve what we do, and we'd love to have our brand catch up with that. We've got several manufacturing, light manufacturing capabilities around the country. We've got a 50,000 square foot facility in Panama City, Florida, for example, where we're bending metal on a regular basis. We've got electronics labs where we're doing custom microelectronics at the circuit board level. We've got high-end labs doing things like modeling and simulation of radio frequency propagation from various communication systems and understanding, you know, when you're going to be able to receive a signal, when you're not, those sorts of things, optimum antenna placement, those sorts of ideas. So, you know, we've got a heck of a lot of, as Brian mentioned, of very talented staff with really strong engineering credentials that are able to take, you know, mechanical and aero and electrical and computer science and blend these systems together and do a lot of really good prototyping and systems integration on existing platforms as well as new ones.
Wow. So good. Then I can ask you this question, okay?
Yep.
One of the things Eric, you've mentioned a couple of times, and Brian as well, autonomous systems. You got, you know, the three trends. I'm taking notes. Autonomous, data fusion, and sense and avoid. Is that
sense
right?
Sense and avoid.
Okay.
Sense and avoid,
so autonomous, what does that mean versus unmanned? Is there a difference? I think autonomous as independent acting?
I'll use a simple example.
Okay.
Right now, a lot of our very high endurance, high altitude reconnaissance airplanes that are unmanned, every step of their mission has to be planned out ahead of time. And that includes emergency or off nominal conditions, right? If they have a fault in electrical system, what do I do? And there's a complicated mapping of, you know, the airplane may do this if it's at this location, but it's going to do this if it's that location. If you had a pilot in the airplane, you can make those decisions real time. Right now, all of that has to be pre-planned, and it's an enormous decision matrix, and it takes a lot of time to figure out all the contingency planning around how is this mission going to actually occur if such and such happens.
So the operator would literally have almost, you know, a matrix of, you know, with them at that time.
If then, pre-programmed.
Some of it's still pre-programmed,
yeah.
but it was done up front with a lot of hand-wringing on the if then,
okay,
what else.
Yeah.
Whereas, a simple thing like I lose an engine, where are my available recovery airfields and in what range, having the vehicle be able to make that decision on its own. That starts to touch on autonomous behavior, really making the best situation and making that decision independent of a human operator. We have a lot of trust issues with really seeing that being done on a broad context right now.
Well, I could see definitely in commercial airspace where, well, even with Google, was it Uber's vehicles? Whose vehicles?
Uber, and there's other
driverless
vehicle companies out there that are testing driverless vehicles actually in urban areas now.
Right. And is that one of the big issues there, too, is there's so many variables.
The ground vehicle is far more dynamic, usually, than the aerial setup. And in many cases, it makes it harder. Again, when you're in a military setup and you're sitting at 65 or 70,000 feet, there's not usually too much interference up there with you. Maybe a couple things, but when you're driving around the streets of Washington, as we've all complained this morning, there's a lot of things getting in your way.
Yeah, it's a bad day today. All those variables, because humans don't do the logical thing, right? And the machine might be more logical, right? It seems to me that's what it strikes me. But you know what? we're already up on the next break. but when we come back, I want to continue that discussion of manned versus unmanned and the integration of the two and autonomous and tease some more of that out. My guests today are Brian Abbey. He is a senior vice president focusing on the Navy Marine Corps C4ISR business. Troy Abbott. Troy is a principal managing engineering solutions delivery for the U.S. Navy. And Eric Billies. Eric is a principal leading the firm's operations in the Pacific Northwest, focusing on digital solutions, virtual reality, and augmented technologies.
Awesome.
And when we come back, we'll continue our discussion of autonomous versus unmanned versus manned, and how can we all live together peacefully. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Fed News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Fed News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guests are from Booz Allen Hamilton. Brian Abbey is a senior vice president focusing on Navy Marine Corps C4ISR business. Troy Abbott. Troy is a principal with Booz Allen Hamilton, focusing and managing engineering solutions delivery primarily for the U.S. Navy. And Eric Billies. Eric is principal leading the firm's North Pacific Northwest operations on this rainy day. thank you, Eric. And Eric focuses on digital solutions, virtual reality, augmented technologies. When he took the break, I said we're going to talk about, to start this segment, the integration of manned, unmanned, autonomous. What are sort of the challenges area in that area, where autonomy can become complete theoretically? So I'm going to turn it over to you, Troy.
Sure, Roger. I mean, you made the comment a minute ago about how humans mess things up by being unpredictable, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So
that was my commute today, for sure.
If you look at the development of these systems, and particularly over the last 10, 15 years maybe, a lot of the effort that's gone into them has been how do we get what's now a mature vehicle and a mature system working in concert with the rest of the fleet that's manned, whether that be cars or airplanes or whatever. But we're trying to shoehorn an autonomous system into an architecture that was built for humans, right?
Right.
Yeah. One of the arguments on autonomous cars, for example, is still that, it's the human uncertainty, the human error that's causing the majority of the accidents.
Right.
Having a autonomous car that can do its own thing and respond to other human drivers that are not doing necessarily predictable things is a real challenge. And a lot of the highway safety folks are saying if the entire fleet of cars on the highway were all autonomous and talking to each other and very regimented in how they operated, we could see extreme safety.
Yes, right.
We take that unpredictable element out. You still have to have cars that have a certain amount of autonomy because physical things do break. Flat tires will still happen, right? Things like that. So you still need a smart car to be able to deal with those kind of situations. But a lot of the difficulty is in making these things work alongside human-operated elements.
Right. So here, I've got to ask this question. So at some point, will my kids not have to worry about driving their car?
That's the goal.
That's entirely possible.
And things like insurance rates, as the reliability gets better, if the insurance actually goes down for driverless cars, you're going to see the business will drive a little bit that direction towards autonomous in terms of vehicles.
The technology is still a little ways off. I'd be shocked if there's a significant number of cars that are sold before... What would you guys say, 2021, 2022 at the earliest? But every major car manufacturer is investing heavily in this technology. An example I can give you, I read this in the newspaper probably 3-4 weeks ago. Ford just invested $1 billion to start an autonomous company to help them drive that technology. It's an independent company from Ford, but it's owned by Ford. And their goal is to get an autonomous car on the road, I think, by 2020 or 2021.
Okay. And we've talked a lot about autonomy. One of the, Eric, back in, I think, in the first segment, you mentioned data fusion. And the use of that, I guess, to help systems make decisions and people make decisions? Or how does that play in this area?
So the amount of data, regardless of the type of platform, whether it's air, maritime, or ground, the amount of data that we're actually acquiring from those systems is just getting greater and tremendous. So how do you actually ingest that data quickly? How do you make sense of that data? How do you do some level of analysis of that data, whether it's artificial intelligence or that's actually a person actually doing that? And then how do you make quick decisions off that? So those types of big data problems in the unmanned systems is one of those areas where technology really can help us in terms of making good decisions off there. And it really depends upon the use cases that I think that you're actually applying an unmanned system to.
The problem is dramatically different if you talk about some of the military applications vice the autonomous car. If you talk about an autonomous car, you want to build as much smarts into the car itself. So you're gathering all this data from dozens of sensors. You got to take various pieces, identify the important parts, and then make a decision. Do I need to stop? Do I need to turn? What do I have to do? But if you're talking about the military, you need to make certain number of decisions in real time right on the platform. Take an aerial vehicle. But then usually a good amount of that data they want to fuse into a set that's digestible that you can communicate back to the rear of the battlefield and make it part of what the command post sees and what they call a common operating picture.
Right. So is one, when you describe that in the data that's collected, obviously for UAVs that are over Afghanistan or whatever, mm-hmm. they're making, in some cases, right, life and death decisions, right?
Lethal decisions.
Do we fire or not? And there'd be a long time before that's autonomous artificial intelligence. I mean, somebody's theoretically got to
execute. Those decisions these days are not made autonomously. And you're right, it's probably going to be a long time before that happens. We were talking about this before we came on the air. There's actually a movie that came out last year called Eye in the Sky. What you just described, that's the whole plot of the movie is, when do I have the right to shoot? When do I need to reach for decisions from seniors within the government? And it's a very complex decision process that's still very much manned.
Right. And the movies and Terminator, right, and artificial intelligence, like mm-hmm. That scares a lot of people, right? I mean, this whole area, when you talk to people who aren't in, who are laymen like myself. I mean, is that sort of some of the response you get or see?
So I was going to say, there's a little bit of a balance, right? So as different kind of operations sort of happen, so swarming type tactics that an adversary may use, sometimes you're going to, at some point, you're going to have to shift to autonomous type weaponry, because the human is not going to be able to make decisions within that performance envelope. There's other things where you say, unmanned or autonomous types of things that you want to keep them manned and a man in the loop. But again, there's going to be that point at which risk, danger is going to actually drive the decision.
I think, the general population, that there are elements that have this fear of an uprising of the robots that are coming to take over the world, right?
Right, right.
But, ultimately, what we still need to be afraid of is the people. It's the people that either programmed a system with bad intent, or folks that literally can, go down to Radio Shack now and buy a drone and put something on it and fly it somewhere they shouldn't, right? I mean, one of the biggest challenges we've got now from an ethics perspective is we've got a proliferation of systems that people can readily get, and there aren't a whole lot of limitations or understanding, honestly, of the dangers of putting these things in certain situations.
So guys, we have to take our last break already. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about cyber. Troy, you just touched on it real briefly, and then maybe go back a little bit to the Mantis system and talk about that and some of the capabilities that, you know, potentially the Navy is looking at through this kind of prototype. And I might give you guys a chance to provide a little bit about your backgrounds for the listening audience. My guests today are Brian Abbey. He is Senior Vice President with Booz Allen Hamilton, Troy Abbott, and Eric Billies. They're both principals with Booz Allen Hamilton, and you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guests are Brian Abbey. He is a Senior Vice President focusing on Navy, Marine Corps, C4ISR. Troy Abbott. Troy is a principal managing the engineering solutions delivery primarily for the U.S. Navy. And Eric Billies. Eric is a principal from the Pacific Northwest focusing on digital solutions, virtual reality, and augmented technologies. So I'm going to start with you then, Eric. One of the things I think of when you, and I think a lot of people think of when they think of these unmanned systems or more autonomous systems, is hacking and cybersecurity. What are some of the considerations and just your thoughts on that?
So I'll start with a quote, Roger. And this
okay.
is, and this is some that I didn't come up myself. It's I actually found this someplace, but war is politics by other means and hacking is war by other means. So yep. Right now, when you start to look at the blurring of peace and war and gray area and hybrid operations and how cybersecurity and cyber operations become pretty paramount right now. When you're talking about autonomous or even unmanned platforms, they already carry a great deal of uncertainty and risk. When you inject that cyber problem into that, that becomes very dangerous, almost perilous in many cases. It's pretty obvious that I think our military is becoming more and so dependent upon our C4ISR systems out there.
Yeah.
When you're talking about unmanned or autonomous, you're talking about different nodes, different entry points, different points in the network, and you have to be able to protect all those different points, else something else can get injected into that system. The other point of that is you're very heavily dependent upon software, and software upgrades happen very, very quickly. So when you start to think about assuring your logistics supply chain, that becomes an even more important component. So all of these things together present just incredible amounts of risk, and it just means that we need to actually engineer our unmanned systems really from the ground up with cybersecurity in mind.
Right, that's a fundamental aspect of it, right?
Yeah, so I mean, if you look at the initial design on a lot of these unmanned systems, and I'll talk aerial for now, they weren't necessarily made with cybersecurity in mind, even the military ones.
Right. Yeah.
If you recall, and I'm forgetting exactly how many years, but probably about 8 years ago, we actually lost a drone in Iran.
Yeah, I remember that.
And ultimately it was found out that it was hacked into and the Iranians took over it and brought it down. At this point, not that I know every last platform that's out there, I believe the military have corrected that problem to a large extent. But, you know, if you look at some of the commercially available unmanned systems, again, mm-hmm. not really designed with cyber security in mind, and it's something that you really have to take into account, or else some dramatic and even drastic things could occur.
Right. I sort of visualize it's like the mobile internet of things, right?
Exactly.
Absolutely. Very good. Yes.
Yep. Yeah. So along those lines, at the end of the day, is part of the solution, and I'm getting way out there now, that continuous diagnostic monitoring, did I get that right? CDM, whatever. Is it the systems themselves identifying when there's a threat? I mean, I'm sure systems do that now, but that capability within something, if you're going to be an autonomous, it's almost like you identify that your body identifies a virus and attacks it, right?
Mm-hmm.
With the antibodies or whatever. Is that where this is going to head even more? Or?
Well, that's certainly happening now. But it's somewhat of an arms race within the cyber community, right? You know, as the hackers get better and find vulnerabilities and weaknesses, we get better at protecting against those weaknesses. And, it's sort of a spiral. I mean, systems are certainly getting better. Yeah. And you know, we definitely have a lot of things from a technology perspective in play to protect against intrusion like that. Right. But yeah, it's I don't think it's anything that's going to go away. It's just going to change its face as different things become available.
So with that, I wanted to go back and talk a little bit about, we touched on Mantis and its capability, and I wanted to, you know, give you guys, Eric, an opportunity to talk a little bit about what, I mean, it sounds, I don't know, mind-boggling is the right word, just the potential capabilities or uses of that kind of technology. So can you talk about that?
Sure. And I'll kind of rewind a little bit. And, you know, Brian here was our executive sponsor for Mantis. This was an idea that we kind of brought with some interaction with different companies that we deal with in the government space. So Mantis really was an idea that we partnered with a company. They had a platform. This company really had a background in boat racing and boat building.
Wow.
And they had a platform that scaled anywhere from 3 feet up to 50 feet. We actually purchased an 8-foot boat, and really the purpose of what we wanted to do with it was some amount of prototyping and experimentation. So I'll give you kind of some things, and Brian talked about this a little bit earlier. So we actually integrated things like an electro-optical infrared camera system. So something that actually, you know, the military could use to do any kind of intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance kind of operations. We also integrated a 4G LTE, a mesh network. So something that's contained, not connected to the outside world. That mesh network is able then to carry all the video that comes off of that camera system. So again, the purpose was initially to kind of demo different sensors and payloads and capabilities. That platform still has quite a bit more room, size, weight, and power to actually put more things into right now. So this is kind of something that we're actually, that Booz Allen is actually actively doing, and using that as a platform and working with government sponsors to say, how can we put different things in there and use them in different ways? Brian talked a little bit about our exercise with the Marine Corps. That's something that we're actually actively doing.
Yeah, our ultimate goal here is to get things to a plug-and-play situation where we have suites of sensors that we could use for a number of different types of exercises. And it's as simple as someone says, we need you to roll out here for force protection or coming ashore. And we just pull these three sensors off and plug them right into the Mantis system and go.
Right. Did you choose 8-foot because that's, I mean, you could scalable to bigger, you know, and you could go smaller too, right?
So you can go smaller. So I think part of the decision was a little bit driven by what was the needs of the current needs of the government clients. What are they really looking for? There are other companies and other agencies that are building larger platforms. So again, part of what our interest and our strategy around this was not to build and be the boat builder, but really to be the integrator and to be the government partner to actually integrate new sensors, new payloads, new capabilities to do new missions.
Right. So we have about 2 minutes left. So I wanted to just, this is a fascinating discussion, and it's always interesting to hear from my guests how they ended up where they are now. So I'm going to start with you, Brian. You know, how'd you end up at, you know, at Booz Allen, you know, doing unmanned systems?
So, initially, my initial job out of college was I worked for NASA at the Jet Propulsion Lab out in California. I did a lot of next generation mobile satellite type things, things that today we take for granted, like satellite radio and even satellite telephones. I was part of a team developing systems in the early 90s.
Wow.
And then about after 10 years at JPL, got tired of the West Coast and wanted to get back to Four Seasons. And I came back to the East Coast. And
are you okay, man? No, go ahead.
I joined Booz Allen about 20 years ago, doing a lot of interesting engineering work in the Army market initially. I was part of a team that helped work the counter IED mission in Iraq and Afghanistan. And as I progressed through Booz Allen to more senior positions, took over the Navy C4ISR business eventually.
Right. Eric?
So my background after college, I was a Navy surface warfare officer, so a ship driver by trade, predominantly working in engineering jobs. Once I left the Navy, I came to Booz Allen. I actually have been with Booz Allen for 16 years.
Wow.
Spending the first 12 years working with the Navy's C4ISR Major Systems Command, Space and Naval Warfare Systems Command in San Diego, California. And that's where I really started to dig in a lot in the world of sensors, comms, and working different programs there. The firm asked me to actually transition up to the Pacific Northwest to kind of take that, take care of the operations and the business we have up there, which really spans more than just Navy. It's Army, it's civilian agencies, and some amount of commercial too as well. And that's, you know, as you know, Seattle is a kind of a hotbed of tech talent and technology and innovation. So we do a little bit of virtual reality, augmented reality types of things. And I partner with Troy and with Brian in terms of looking at our total unmanned systems autonomous business as well.
Troy?
So I'm an aviation guy. Flight dynamics and control is really my specialty. So I also spent some time at NASA, but my time was in wind tunnels and simulators doing flight control systems. And came out of there and went to the Navy to work on some of their fighters and, you know, V-22 during the day was, you know, just being developed. So, yeah, mostly flight control systems development. And a lot of that, you know, with manned platforms was all about redundancy management and what happens when this breaks and that fails. And I took that into to work in unmanned systems flight control. So I've been doing a lot of that work. And then, you know, slowly got farther away from the real fun work and more into managing teams that could do it for me.
You got to get back to the fun stuff, right? Well, guys, I want to thank you for being on the show. So I appreciate it.
Thank you, Roger.
Thanks, Roger. Fascinating stuff. My guests today have been Brian Abbey, Senior Vice President, Booz Allen Hamilton, Troy Abbott, and Eric Billies, both are principals with Booz Allen Hamilton. And you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.